and welcome to Useful Idiots. I'm Katie Halper.
And I'm Aaron Matte. How are you, Katie?
How are you doing, Aaron? Oh, jinx. I'm good. We're so in sync. You see, we have that chemistry from working together. We finish each other's sentences. I'm good. How was your Memorial Day weekend?
It was good. I went to Montreal for a extended bachelor party with some old friends. And I used to live there, so it was cool to revisit amid the debauchery of a bachelor party.
Did you do anything that you can mention?
One really cool thing you can do in Montreal is you can rent these bikes, kind of like they have City Bike in New York City. I mean, every city has this now, but in Montreal, I'm not sure if they have this everywhere, but some of the bikes are like electric bikes. So you can, if you want to go up like the mountain, there's like a Mont Royal mountain in Montreal, you can go up. These e-bikes give you like that extra juice. So we just, you know, like this was 18 guys and we spent a lot of time just cruising around the city. It was a great way to see the city in an environmentally friendly way and also getting some exercise. So that was a lot of
fun. That's great. Did you wear helmets?
No comment. Wow. No comment. Yeah. No comment.
I'm glad that the paparazzi wasn't there.
Yeah.
Because had they been there.
What kind of a snitch question is that? Did you wear a helmet?
I think you know what it is. It's a snitch. It's a public health question. We have with great power comes great responsibility.
No, you're right. I do always wear a helmet. And it's very important. And this was a rare slip, but we didn't do anything crazy. This was very you know, tame bike.
I mean, Aaron is huge in Canada. You think he's huge in the United States. Imagine how huge he is in the country where he's from, a country that has a lot less going on than the United States. So I'm just grateful, deeply grateful that the Canadian paparazzi.
Yeah, they somehow didn't notice me. It's crazy. That's crazy. Yeah. They're going to be devastated when they realize, when they learn.
I know.
That I was in town and they missed me.
And they missed it, yeah. But good for us, because now we don't have to have an awkward PR moment where we, you know, do a special PSA video where we ride around in very clunky helmets.
That's
teaching
right.
kids. That's the
right.
thing to do, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
How was your weekend?
Yeah. I saw two very important movies. I saw Top Gun Maverick. But you know what I had to do before I saw Top Gun Maverick?
See the original Top Gun.
The original wow. Top Gun, which I hadn't seen. Had you seen it?
I've seen the original, yes.
So I watched that on Netflix. It really kind of sucks.
Sure,
like,
yeah.
It sucked. It wasn't good. I mean, maybe my expectations were too high. I have a feeling that part of it is that it was amazing cinematography for the time. And it doesn't stand up that much. It's kind of dated. But what I will say is that I'm glad I saw it, because then I saw Top Gun Maverick in the theaters. I was masked. In the theaters. And I was able to enjoy it. I did. I liked that movie. I liked that. It was good. I was able to enjoy it, I think, that much more having seen the first one.
Everyone likes that movie. I've heard nothing but good reviews. Everyone says it's a fun picture. And is it as jingoistic as the first movie?
Yeah. What's interesting about both of them is they don't show or name the enemy. So we don't know who the enemy is. I mean, I'm pretty sure during the 80s it was Russia. This time it could be, there are lots of different options, but yeah, their assignment is to destroy an enemy uranium enrichment center.
I'll tell you what's great about the first one. First of all, Danger Zone by Kenny Loggins.
It's great.
It's just a great song. It's just a really exciting song. And it, you know, I think that really helped sell the movie back when it came out. And then the volleyball scene.
Yes, very homoerotic.
Yeah, that's one of the, you know, best homoerotic scenes ever on film, I think, the volleyball scene.
Yeah, they didn't have any updated version of that, which is too bad. Yeah, that needed to be updated, yeah.
Thank you for raising awareness about independent cinema. It's a hard time right now for the independent filmmakers like Tom Cruise and whoever, you know, was behind his low-budget Top Gun movie. So thank you for spreading the word about Top Gun Maverick, which now people can see.
Without shows like Useful Idiots, you'd never hear about these below the radar films that are just trying to be seen by anyone out there. So now you know about it. So you're welcome. I mean, we are your one-stop shop for pop culture, politics.
So everyone, do your part for independent cinema and go see Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah, that great anti-war independent film.
Yeah.
So should we get into our four basic food groups?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. What do we got? We got Democrats suck, Republicans suck. Isn't that terrible? Isn't that weird? Isn't that terrible? So you got the Dem suck, right, for this week?
So this week for Democrats suck, we have the top Democrat, Joe Biden, who is complaining
Top Gun.
The people are not sufficiently appreciating how great his presidency is. And in fact, his approval ratings are at record lows for him, and he's blaming everybody but himself, including his own aides. And that's reported in a new article from NBC News called Inside a Biden White House Adrift. And this is some of what it says. Beyond policy, Biden is unhappy about a pattern that has developed inside the West Wing. He makes a clear and succinct statement, only to have aides rush to explain that he actually meant something else. The so-called cleanup campaign, he has told advisors, undermines him and smothers the authenticity that fueled his rise. Worse, it feeds a Republican talking point that he's not fully in command. So, Katie, this is the problem. So basically, when Biden blurts out something crazy like, we're going to intervene militarily if China attacks Taiwan, or we want regime change inside of Russia, it undermines his authenticity if his aides are scrambling to correct him and say that, no, that's not really what he meant.
Yeah, it smothers it.
He's being smothered.
It's violent. It's actual violence.
So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the answer is, because obviously the guy has loose lips and he's not going to stop blurting stuff out. So maybe next time, whatever he says,
they should just go with it.
Yeah. Like, you know, if he says, for example, we're going to use nuclear weapons, I guess it's time to go with it, because otherwise he's going to be smothered.
Do you think he's upset that, do you think he wants, like, wanted them not to walk back his regime change comments about Russia, about Putin, how we need to get rid of him, for God's sake?
It actually addresses that in the next paragraph. This is what it says. The issue came to a head when Biden ad-libbed during a speech in Poland that Russian President Vladimir Putin cannot remain in power. Within minutes, Biden's aides tried to walk back his comments, saying he hadn't called for Putin's removal and that U.S. policy was unchanged. Biden was furious that his remarks were being seen as unreliable, arguing that he speaks genuinely and reminding his staff that he's the one who is president.
So does that mean Biden's actually coming out once again for regime change?
Yes, but what's strange is now Biden is contradicting Biden, because there's a new op-ed that he wrote in the New York Times where he says we're not seeking regime change. So now Biden basically is smothering himself.
Oh my God, that's auto-smothering. That's illegal in some states. Wow.
So there's more. The article also says Biden has vented to aides about not getting credit from Americans or the news media for actions he believes have helped the country, particularly on the economy. Unemployment rates have dropped to below 4% pre-pandemic levels, but polling indicates most Americans believe the economy is in bad shape. Geez, I wonder why.
They're being fed right-wing talking points.
That's right. It's all right-wing talking points. That's right. So higher gas prices, you know, low wages, a tough job market. That's all Republican talking points.
Yeah.
Biden grouses that Republicans aren't getting their fair share of the blame for legislative gridlock in Congress, while he's repeatedly faulted for not getting his agenda passed. The president has also told aides he doesn't think enough Democrats go on television to defend him. A particular sore spot is his slumping poll numbers. He's mystified that his approval rating has dropped to a level approaching that of his predecessor, Donald Trump, ranked by historians as one of the worst presidents in history. I love the part where he's mad that he's faulted for not getting his agenda passed, when his party controls both houses of Congress. So who does he want to fault? Do you want to blame Joe Manchin and Sinema?
Yeah, and he literally ran on being able to get stuff done. Like, that was his shtick, right? Bernie was the socialist who had nice ideas, who couldn't ever get anything done. Biden was the guy who was going to get things done. Turns out he's the guy who can't get things done.
Yeah, he also was the guy who was not going to shut down the economy, but shut down the pandemic.
Right.
That didn't really happen until Vladimir Putin invaded Ukraine. That really kind of shut down the pandemic. But so I guess Biden could get some credit there. But yeah, he's approaching Trump's levels of approval, his low levels of approval. And, you know, there's a lot to not be satisfied with. And it's amazing that he's blaming everyone but himself.
We as voters need to, we got to do our part and make Joe Biden great again.
All right. So that's another reason, another week for Democrats suck.
Another reason, another example, Democrats suck.
America starts the day with America in the morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
For Republican suck, we have a moment of suckitude and levity from Marjorie Taylor Greene. Let's just let her rip. Let's hear what this proud, brave congresswoman has to say.
You have to accept the fact that the government totally wants to provide surveillance on every part of your life. They want to know when you're eating. They want to know if you're eating a cheeseburger, which is very bad because Bill Gates wants you to eat his fake meat that grows in a peach tree dish. So you'll probably get a little zap inside your body and that say, no, no, don't eat a real cheeseburger. You need to eat the fake burger, the fake meat from Bill Gates. They probably also want to know when you go to the bathroom and if you're bowel movements are on time or consistent. I mean, what else do these people want to know?
Good information from Marge. But can you play that again? Because she has an interesting turn of phrase she uses.
Bill Gates wants you to eat his fake meat that grows in a peach tree dish.
Did you hear where that's grown? It's grown in a peach tree dish. I'm just saying, if you're going to accuse the government of surveilling your bowels, your bowel movements, your eating habits, just nail it and say petri dish, not peach tree dish.
You know, Katie, I'm going to push back a little bit. And maybe this is because of my soft spot for MTG, because she voted no on the Ukraine proxy war bill, $40 billion, most of it for the weapons industry for the Ukraine proxy war, whereas every single Democrat voted for it. Maybe I'm just biased by that. But look, first of all, she's from Georgia. Georgia is the peach state.
You're right.
So maybe she's just being influenced by her roots. And, you know, I misspeak sometimes. And I find that kind of, I find those kinds of mistakes endearing. I think it's funny.
You know, she's actually, I like that. She's actually doing good by her state. She's boosting the local economy.
Mm-hmm. She's promoting Georgia peaches. There we go.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
So this shouldn't have been, this is a Republicans are awesome, not a Republican suck. Thank you, Aaron, for speaking truth to power. The vast left-wing conspiracy against Marjorie Taylor Greene. Picking MTG. On her. MTG, yeah.
All right. So for Isn't That Weird, we have something that is going to make all you vegans out there really question your lifestyle choices. Just as Marjorie Taylor Greene is rightfully concerned that Bill Gates wants us to eat fake meat. Luckily, we in this country, we have the opportunity to eat real meat. Such as tractor trailer crash sends 15,000 pounds of hot dog filler onto Pennsylvania highway. And there it is. There it is, everybody. Look at that. That's what we're all consuming when we have a hot dog. So if you're a vegan out there, aren't you jealous of what the meat eaters or the filler eaters get to eat?
That looks like that was grown in a peach tree dish.
Yes, that's definitely from a peach tree dish.
Yeah.
Peach tree dish is kind of it's kind of a tough thing to say. It reminds me of, remember on 30 Rock there, that joke about the show called The Rural Juror. Remember that?
I didn't watch that much 30 Rock, and I didn't see enough.
Oh, yeah. So 30 Rock had this joke where a cast member is cast on the show called The Rural Juror. It's hard to say. Rural and Peach Juror. Tree yeah, Dish is kind of...
Peach Tree Dish, yeah. Well, luckily, most people don't usually have to say it.
That's true.
But she's bringing it up. We're going to bring it back.
Absolutely.
I mean, by back, I mean bring it into existence. It's becoming a thing, the Peach Tree Dish, yeah.
Yeah. And bring back also hot dog filler, because it took a big hit with that 15,000 pound spill in Pennsylvania. So hopefully there's another supply out there.
Yeah, we got to get that. Yeah, this would be a good, this is great PR for the vegan movement, by the way. I wouldn't be surprised if the vegan movement actually left something in the road, like a banana peel or something to cause that crash. Because it looks so unappealing. I mean, I don't eat red meat, I don't eat hot dogs, but if I did, I wouldn't want to look at that. Isn't that terrible? I have a story that has a kind of happy ending, but it could have easily been terrible. And it's terrible for a couple of reasons. Let's just watch the video.
This grandfather from Australia had to go one-on-one with the kangaroo who attacked him in his front yard.
Went ass up, and then he jumped on me back, and was just fortunate enough that there was a stick there where I landed.
He told Rebecca Powell from 10 News First he not only had to keep himself safe, but also his dogs.
Took him to the ground, and was fortunate that I did, because he would have, you know, opened me up like an envelope. So yeah, I wrestled him on the ground for 5 minutes.
The 59-year-old battled the almost 6-foot-tall animal for several minutes, but luckily escaped without serious injury.
He gouged top of my head, and he bit me on the finger and cut me down the arm and ripped me jacket off.
This wildlife expert says the attack could have been worse.
He was extremely lucky because they are very powerful. And those hind legs, if it had reached forwards and kicked a couple more times, it might have got him somewhere where it could do some real damage.
He adds that if someone is ever in this situation, the best thing to do is be smart and passive.
If you've got a kangaroo that's looking a bit aggressive towards you, crouch down, back away. Don't wave your arms at it. Don't stand up tall and be macho, because you're likely to come unstuck.
For Inside Edition Digital, I'm Andrea Swindle.
So that was just terrible for so many reasons. I mean, it's a happy ending. The man is safe. The dogs are safe. But he didn't have to provoke the kangaroo.
He
could have engaged in nonviolent resistance and crouched down and not been macho, like that guy said. And really, this is not a good moment. This is bad propaganda. It's anti-kangaroo propaganda. It shows the kangaroo as a violent creature. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know. Maybe they would have opened him up like an envelope, as he worried. And to be fair, an ostrich did do something close to that to Johnny Cash. So really? It can happen, yeah.
With Johnny Cash was attacked by...
an ostrich, yeah.
Really?
Cut him down the middle, wow. Yeah. But, I mean, ostriches are pretty ugly, so that doesn't surprise me that much. This is just a jarring experience, I guess, for me, because kangaroos are sympathetic characters. They're dealing with a lot in Australia, a lot of fires, a lot of adversity, and then it's kind of this cognitive dissonance. Now I see a kangaroo who's kind of the bad guy, but I don't know, maybe the guy is the bad guy. Maybe the guy was infringing on his property, which is the natural earth. I don't know.
Or Katie, what if this really is the kangaroo's true nature, and this portrayal of the gentle kangaroo is really just kangaroo propaganda?
It could be, and I've been duped by it. So so it's terrible in so many ways, because either it's terrible because this is what kangaroos are really like, and it's a terrible awakening for me because I realize how duped I am by, I like to think I see through mainstream media and propaganda, but I've been duped by Big Roo. Propaganda and the Big Roo lobby.
Yep.
Or it's terrible because this is not the real nature of kangaroos. I don't know. I mean, I think that maybe it's an Australian thing, because I think koalas are kind of assholes too, even though they look so adorable. So maybe, I wonder if Australians are like that too as people. They do look like a good time.
I'll say this. There go my future plans for Australia. I'm never setting foot there.
Yeah, seriously.
I can't risk kangaroo rage.
Yeah, kangaroo rage. Yeah, especially, I mean, Aaron, you've talked about this yourself. You're maybe if you had another foot or two in height. But it's that much more dangerous for you.
That's true. I'm at risk.
You're at risk
from the kangaroo. That's yeah. Right. Yes, I'm at risk.
You'd be good for a koala. I mean, you're taller than koalas.
That's
you'd
right.
But I think that they have claws. I don't know. We're going to have to do a deep dive on this. We're going to have to do a deep dive on Australian animals and see what's up with them. The wombat, what's up with that? Oh, it rhymes. Yeah. Terrible for many reasons. We're going to find out over the course of we're going to do a deep dive starting next week. This show is shifting foci. We're going to become an Australian wildlife focus podcast.
Great new rebrand.
Great new rebrand. Yeah. We're so excited to bring back to the show Ali Abunima. He is the co-founder of the Electronic Intifada and author of The Battle for Justice in Palestine, now out from Haymarket Books. He's also the author of One Country, A Bold Proposal to End the Israeli-Palestinian Impasse.
All right, let's go to Ali Abunima.
Thank you so much for joining us. We're so excited to talk to you. There's a lot to talk about when it comes to the Israeli occupation of Palestine, but one of the most important stories that we want to talk to you about was the, of course, the killing of Shireen Abu Akleh. If you could update people on where we are in that investigation.
Thanks to both of you, Katie and Aaron, for having me back. I mean, the first thing to say is there is no investigation as far as Israel is concerned and as far as the United States is concerned. The United States, Shireen Abu Akleh, who was killed in cold blood by a sniper on May 11th, was an American. She's Palestinian first, but she was also an American citizen. And as such, you would expect the U.S. government to take an interest in her murder. And instead, what happened as soon as she was killed was that State Department Ned Price, State Department spokesman Ned Price, said Israel is perfectly capable of investigating itself. And Israel went through the motions of its usual self-investigation and within a few days decided that there was going to be no criminal investigation and case closed. All the evidence, and the reason we can assume that happened is that all the evidence, which Israel is not even denying at this point, is that Israel did it. I'm almost certain that Israel knows exactly which of its soldiers killed Shireen Abu Akleh, that they know which weapon was fired, and they almost certainly have video of it, because the Israeli soldiers typically now wear body cams, and Israel had in fact released some body cam image from Jenin from that day, the town in the West Bank where she was killed, in order to try to frame the Palestinians. And that was Israel's original strategy, was to frame the Palestinians, to claim that the Palestinians did it. It's a well-worn propaganda strategy, but it completely fell apart within hours because people on the ground were able to debunk the footage which Israel released and show that the place where Israel says Palestinians were firing guns was nowhere near the place where Shireen Abu Akleh was killed. There was no possible way, it would have been physically impossible for a Palestinian to have done it. But long story short, Israel did one of its usual whitewashes and closed the book. The question, though, is will that be the end of the story? Because the Palestinian Authority did carry out a formal investigation. They have the bullet which killed her, which they identified as a 5.56 millimeter bullet of the kind the Israeli army uses. And they have turned the file over to the International Criminal Court. The problem there is that the ICC just has not taken at all seriously the investigation related to Israel's violation of Palestinian rights.
And what was she covering? What was Shireen covering? Because often we hear of these tragic stories that are very dramatic, that include, the murder. But then we have in the background is this much more kind of mundane systemic violence against Palestinians. So what was happening in Jenin that she was covering in the first place?
Right. Well, there was an Israeli force in Jenin that was probably there on an operation to detain or kill a wanted Palestinian. And there had been Israeli operations in Jenin actually for weeks and months, because Jenin remains a center of armed resistance in the West Bank. Israel and its allies in the Palestinian Authority have done their best to disarm Palestinian resistance in the West Bank, organized Palestinian resistance. And Jenin has been a place where both the Palestinian Authority and Israel have failed to achieve that goal. And recently there have been a number of what you'd call lone wolf attacks by Palestinians, carrying out knife attacks or shooting attacks within Israel. And at least one or two of those alleged attackers came from the Jenin area. Also, several of the, you'll remember the Palestinian prisoners who escaped from Israeli prison last September. Several of them were also from the Jenin area, most famously Zakaria Zubeidi, who whose brother Israel killed as well in as a result of one of these recent attacks. And another brother, I believe, is detained by Israel. So they have been trying to break resistance in Jenin. The videos show, because the Israel claims at first that, you know, oh, she was killed in the crossfire. That's always the Israeli line. It's crossfire, fog of war. We can't tell what happened. But all the video that did come out shows that the scene was completely calm at that time. There was no shooting between Israeli invaders and Palestinian defenders. And all of a sudden, there's a burst of gunfire and then another one. And Shireen Abu Akleh is killed. So it seems to have been a quite deliberate killing. She, of course, was wearing a press, clearly marked press vest and helmet. Of course, we don't know the motive of the killer. There's every reason, all the evidence is that it was deliberate. I think the open question is whether they knew it was Shireen Abu Akleh or whether the shooter just wanted to kill a journalist, because we saw in 2018, during the Great March of Return protests in Gaza, Israel targeting and killing two journalists, Yasser Murtaza and Abu Hussein is his last name, but just his first name slipped my mind at this moment. Both were targeted and killed in Gaza with no consequences. And so Israeli soldiers know that they can kill journalists and there will be no consequences for them or for the state of Israel. Notably, just a few weeks before Shireen Abu Akleh was killed, the International Federation of Journalists had submitted a detailed complaint to the International Criminal Court, you know, an affidavit of, I'm not sure what the technical legal term is, but they'd submitted that to the ICC regarding the deliberate targeted killing of two journalists in Gaza and the deliberate targeting and maiming of two other journalists. And that complaint has now subsequently been amended to include the killing of Shireen Abu Akleh as well. So all of these, you know, Palestinians do what they're supposed to do in terms of pursuing justice, but it's a dead end if the United States is, I mean, you can just imagine the analogy, which is that, in fact, you don't need to imagine it. When an American photojournalist was killed in Ukraine early on during the Russian invasion, the State Department immediately declared, I think his name was Brent Renaud, I think. The State Department immediately described it as a deliberate killing and atrocity by Russia. There was no demand for Russia to investigate. You know, that would be the equivalent is if the U.S. says, well, we want Russia to carry out a thorough and impartial investigation. Of course, the U.S. would never do that. But that's exactly what they do when Israel kills Palestinians. They ask Israel to investigate itself, and the results are completely predictable.
And also, I have to say, in the case of Brent Renaud, it's actually not even clear that Russia killed him. Information on that has not really come out. They won't say who did it, which says to me that it might not have been Russia. But
the interesting thing, Aaron, is because after the killing of Shireen Abu Akleh, I went back and looked at what happened with Brent Renaud. You know, the sort of the mainstream name brand, you know, one of these Reporters Without Borders or CPJ or one of these journalist groups, I think it was Reporters Without Borders, but they were saying at the time that all the governments and media were just directly blaming Russia. They were saying that it was in unclear circumstances. So, you know, the international mainstream reputable journalism groups weren't blaming Russia. They were saying, you know, it could have been Russia, but we don't know because it's unclear. The governments were jumping to that conclusion. Of course, the media was just going along with it.
Let me ask you to tell us more about Shireen Abu Akleh, who she was and what she meant to Palestinians around the world.
you know, it's sort of hard to describe. She was just such a fixture. She was someone who you didn't think of necessarily, you know, she was a brilliant journalist. She was highly respected. She was certainly courageous. And she was just, you know, you took her for granted. When things were happening in Palestine, you took it for granted that she would bring the story. She would be there. She would go there. And for a generation, I mean, she started working at Al Jazeera in 1997 at the age of 25 or 26. So she spent half her life, half her whole life, not even half her working life, half her whole life working for Al Jazeera and becoming really a household name and face and a trusted name and face, not just to Palestinians, but you know, to tens of millions or perhaps hundreds of millions of people across the Arab world who watch Al Jazeera. And, you know, I'm not sure what the American equivalent would be. I mean, someone like, I mean, now I know that people don't even know what broadcast news is these days, and nor should they, but it would be something like, you know, someone as familiar and well-known as Peter Jennings. Maybe for our generation, I think younger people might not even know who Peter Jennings is. So it was just an unbelievable shock and a sense that, you know, if they can kill Shireen Abu Akleh with total impunity, no consequences, you know, a couple of days of bad headlines, some hand-wringing from the State Department, and then it's back to business as usual, then literally nobody is safe. Israel can kill any Palestinian at any time, doesn't matter how famous they are, it doesn't matter if they're Muslim, if they're Christian, if they're a man, if they're a woman, if they have American citizenship. Nothing will protect you from Israel if you're a Palestinian. And that's the message that, whether intended or not, Israel drove home with the killing of Shireen Abu Akleh.
And what's scary also is that this is not the only killing that will not be investigated. As we know, and as you wrote about, there was another person, a Palestinian-American, Omar Asad, who was killed by Israel. His family is demanding an investigation. What is the status of that investigation?
Right. Well, the first thing to say is that in virtually no cases, I mean, we're talking about, you know, an infinitesimal number of cases when Israel kills Palestinians, is there any kind of investigation? You know, mostly there's no investigation at all. And then when there is an investigation, what you have to know is that Israel's self-investigation system is designed to whitewash the killing of Palestinians. It's not designed to investigate them. And the Israeli human rights group B'Tselem in 2016 announced that after 25 years of going along with the system, they would no longer cooperate with it. They said, we have spent 25 years submitting complaints on behalf of Palestinians for maiming, for killing, for injuring, for destruction of property. And the system is, they called it a fig leaf. And it's designed really to whitewash Israel's crimes. It never leads to accountability. The only cases where there is sometimes an indictment leading to a trial are the vanishingly small number of cases that reach an international spotlight. You know, in the past couple of years, I can think of, you know, a tiny handful, the killing of the Palestinian teenager Mohammed Abu Khder in Jerusalem in 2014, for example. In 2016, an Israeli army medic murdered a Palestinian in cold blood on video, like an injured Palestinian lying on the ground in Hebron, and just like took his gun at point blank range and executed him. A medic, someone whose job is to provide first aid, did it on video. He became a national hero. But it was such an international outrage that Israel put him on trial. He was sentenced to, I think it was 14 months in prison, and that was then reduced to 8 months. So that's the norm. So that's to give you the context that if we're even hearing about, you know, talk of an investigation of Shireen Abu Akleh or Omar Asad, it's because they happen to be Palestinian Americans. And so there's a little bit more attention. Omar Asad was a 78-year-old Palestinian American. He'd lived 40 years, raised a family in Milwaukee, running grocery stores. 10 years ago, him and his wife decided to move back to the West Bank to his native village called Jiljilia. They built a house, and he was going home from a relative's house one night this past January when Israeli soldiers randomly stopped him. This almost 80-year-old man with 17 grandchildren and 3 great-grandchildren. 5 adult children, 17 grandchildren, 3 great-grandchildren, a beloved grandfather, a beloved great-grandfather. They pulled him out of his car in the middle of the night. They tied his hands behind his back. They blindfolded him. They gagged him. They dragged him and frog-marched him to a construction site. They abused him. There were his autopsy found that there were all sorts of marks of abuse on his body, and then they left him dead. At first, the Israelis, as they do in every case, as they did with Shireen Abu Akleh, they lie about it. So the first public statement, when after he was found, this almost 80-year-old man, they said, "Oh yeah, we detained a man. He was uncooperative, but then we let him go." What they mean by "we let him go" is we left him lying dead on the side of the road. The U.S., of course, same State Department spokesperson Ned Price, said, "Oh, we want Israel to do a thorough investigation." Israel did a self-investigation. Took them a week, by the way. That's long for Israel's self-investigations. They took a whole week, and they lightly disciplined 3 officers. 2 were just, you know, one was given, I think, yeah, 2 were told they couldn't hold command positions for 2 years, and 1 was given a reprimand. That was it. And that was only because the State Department had spoken about it. So, it, of course, no investigation, no criminal charges. And so his family, through the civil rights attorney, Stanley Cohen, he's quite a character. If you follow him on Twitter, I think he's at Stanley Cohen Law. But through Stanley Cohen, the family wrote a very moving letter to Merrick Garland, the attorney general, demanding an investigation. And just one line from it that I quoted in the story that I wrote for the Electronic Intifada: "A United States citizen demands justice from his grave." And the family is saying is, look, you know, the US is sending teams of FBI forensic experts and investigators to Ukraine to help the ICC collect evidence of war crimes in Ukraine. The European Union and Canada and other countries are doing the same. But you won't send anyone to investigate the killing of American citizens like Omar Asad, like Shireen Abu Akleh, like 16-year-old Mahmoud Sha'lan, a Palestinian-American teenager shot dead in the streets of occupied East Jerusalem in 2016, a U.S. citizen. Again, the U.S. said, oh, there has to be an investigation. Nothing has happened. This is one of the most closely CCTV monitored places in the world, East Jerusalem. And Israel has refused to this day to release the CCTV. I always get caught on that. The CCTV footage.
Caught on CCTV footage,
uh-huh. Yeah, of the killing of Palestinian-American teenager Mahmoud Sha'lan. And remember, the Israelis will release, it'll take them 5 minutes to release a video that they claim frames the Palestinians for killing Shireen Abu Akleh. But they know what's in these videos of Palestinian-American teenager Mahmoud Shahlan. That's why they won't release them. But the US government is fine with that. And this is why these killings continue with complete impunity.
Well, Ali, I want to ask you what it's like as a Palestinian to watch the Western response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine and seeing this parade of Western leaders talk about supporting a people's right to resist foreign tyranny, and how awful it is for foreign countries to seize the sovereign territory of another people. So I'm just curious your reaction to seeing that, the disparity between how the Biden administration talks about rights of Ukrainians and how those same rights that they claim to defend don't exist for Palestinians and Syrians as well, whose land has been stolen by Israel for many decades now.
And to hear the rest of the interview, please go to usefulidiots.substack.com.
That was great.
Great to hear from Ali and get an update on what's going on. It's so easy for Palestine to get overshadowed by all the other crises in the world, but this is the crisis that it's always been, and it continues it could not continue without the critical support of the US government. So always important to hear what's going on and what can be done to counter it.
He does great work. Electronic Intifada does great work. So thank you again. Thanks to everyone who came and watched the show, listened to the show. Thanks for your support. Couldn't do it without you.
And to support us, if you're not already, you can go to usefulidiots.substack.com, where you be a part of the Useful Idiots community and get bonus content.
All right. See you guys next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Hello. Thank you so much for listening to and watching Useful Idiots. For full episodes and extended interviews, please subscribe at usefulidiots.substack.com. You can subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/usefulidiots for clips, live streams, and full episodes. Also, subscribe to us wherever you find your podcast. Follow us on Twitter at usefulidiotpod and use the hashtag usefulidiotspod. Join us Mondays at 10 a.m. for the Useful Idiots Monday Morning Show, where we discuss the Sunday morning news shows so you don't have to watch them.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.